This is AgriPulse Open Mic, brought to you by the U.S. Grains Council, a private nonprofit organization dedicated to building export markets for U.S. barley, corn, sorghum, and their products. The council is headquartered in Washington, D.C., and has 10 international offices and active market development programs in more than 50 countries. For more information, visit www.grains.org. Chuck, welcome back to AgriPulse Open Mic.
Stuart, it's good to be back with you.
In fact, the last time you were on this webcast, you were wrapping up 8 years with the Bush administration, first as Special Assistant to the President for Agriculture, and then, of course, as USDA Deputy Secretary. By my math, it's been 13 months since you walked out of the Witten Building for the last time. How's the transition back to the private sector gone?
It's been a great transition, Stuart. The co-op world is a good fit for me. You know, I grew up with farmer-owned co-ops. Family have been members of co-ops, you know, for many generations, and so representing them here in Washington is a kind of a natural fit for me, and I've enjoyed it a lot.
All businesses, of course, have been challenged by the economic downturn and access to credit issues of the past 18 months or so. How are farmer-owned cooperatives doing? How did they come through this period?
They've fared reasonably well, Stuart. 2008, for the most part, was a very, very good year to be in the co-op business. 2009, you know, was not as strong as 2008, but, you know, many did okay during this period. I think the real question a lot of our members have is, you know, how is 2010 going to fare out for them? And, you know, these are open questions, but for the most part, you know, these co-ops are very, very well-managed operations. They're, you know, financially sound. We have, you know, some that are experiencing difficulty, you know, in certain regions of the country because of, you know, the cycles of agriculture. But this, you know, this is a solid business structure with co-ops, and, you know, they are conservative investors out there and are doing well during these very, very difficult economic times.
In recent weeks, you and the council have expressed unease about a series of U.S. Department of Justice and U.S. Department of Agriculture competition in agriculture workshops. Do you view these workshops as a way for stakeholders to express views? Do you think it's a witch hunt? Or just what do you think is this administration trying to accomplish here?
Well, obviously, Stuart, you never want to be against members of the U.S. government, whether it's USDA, Department of Justice, whatever the case may be, you know, getting out in the field and hearing what, you know, is on the mind of farmers and producers out there. And certainly that aspect of it is positive. But, you know, our concern is, you know, we feel like there is a situation where our own Department of Justice is coming into the these workshops with some preconceived ideas that, you know, perhaps there are some good co-ops out there, but that there are a lot, you know, other bad co-ops as well. And that for those co-ops that maybe don't look exactly like the Department of Justice, you know, thinks they ought to look, that, you know, raising real questions as to whether or not they should, you know, be provided the limited antitrust immunity provided under the Capper-Volstead Act. And this is, you know, very, very concerning to us. Without the protections provided under Capper-Volstead, frankly, co-ops as we know them today simply would not exist, because you couldn't, you know, come together as individual producers and collectively market your products, as is commonplace in so many different commodities throughout the United States. And so, you know, we feel very, very compelled to make sure that at these workshops that the producer's voice is heard, that the co-op voice is heard, that, you know, we want to retain this opportunity to come together to market our products, because, you know, that collective coming together, if you will, is, you know, more important today than at the time, you know, of the first Capper-Volstead back in the 1920s, when you look at the concentration and the retail side of the food and agricultural business that we have in place today. It has become so highly concentrated that each individual producer, while that producer may be bigger himself than the producer of the 1920s, if you look in a comparative analysis of any kind, his buying power within that marketplace of the retail giants that we have today is so limited that if you took away that ability to come together in the form of co-op, there would virtually be no marketing power on the part of that individual producer, and you know, they would suffer. They would get lower prices, dramatically lower prices as a result, and that's just not a good thing.
DOJ has issued CID, civil investigative demands of Monsanto and DuPont and investigating the seed industry. Any CIDs been requested of either your group or any of your members that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of, Stuart. And, you know, this is something we monitor pretty carefully and have had an open dialogue with our folks within the Department of Justice, you know, numerous discussions on things. So this is, you know, not anything we're aware of at this point. But, you know, given the comments that are coming out of many within the Department of Justice, it's not anything you can ignore. And we do, you know, try and keep track of this very, very carefully, because clearly from some of the public statements that senior officials have made within the Department of Justice, they do tend to come into this thing thinking that, you know, small is good, and it, you know, if you don't fit into that narrow little box that they've defined, that somehow you're, you know, not promoting competition in America. And again, that we just don't believe the facts back any of that up, and are anxious to present those facts and that information out there, and think that will, again, not only show that there's competition, but show the value and the need for co-ops around the country.
Let's turn to climate legislation for a moment. It would seem at this point in time that the cap-and-trade approach is dead. You have Senators Kerry, Lieberman, and Graham working on a different approach that appears is going to involve pricing carbon in various sectors. I know NCFC was very concerned last year when cap-and-trade was doing its thing through the House. Now that that appears to be dead and you're moving on to something else, what do you think now about where this is headed?
I will just say this, Stuart. I continue to advise my membership that, you know, we've won some early victories here in the climate debate, and I think rightfully and successfully showed that our economy, you know, cannot withstand these kind of cost increases. And for agriculture in particular, these are added costs that our foreign competitors would not bear, and therefore, you know, put us at a competitive disadvantage. And as well, for those supply co-ops that are involved in the business of, you know, selling refined fuels, in some cases even, you know, domestic crude refined into fuels, this accounts for about, you know, somewhere between 50 to 60% of the market share of fuel sold in rural America. And, you know, these would be extremely disadvantaged. Cost, you know, would be added substantially in this case for those kind of fuels sold predominantly to farmers and people in rural America. So, you know, we have made that point. We appreciate the fact that it seemingly has sunk in, and Congress is taking a very, very slow approach to this thing now. But at the same time, too, we're telling our folks, you know, the issue has not gone away totally, and that there still is going to be a debate on climate and carbon going forward. It'll be energy focused, if nothing else, but, you know, we could well get into, the value of carbon kind of debate as well. And so we need to continue to look at this and monitor this and try and figure out, you know, where our points are, where we might be able to live with certain things and certain things that are just going to have, you know, devastating consequences for American agriculture and for the co-ops that serve the farmers.
Talk about Farm Bill. Something you know just a little bit about, having worked on a few of them. Chairman Peterson is going to launch hearings on the 2012 Farm Bill here in a matter of weeks. First off, do you think Chairman Peterson is wise by starting this process early? And second, what do you think the biggest challenge is for farm and commodity groups going into this exercise?
It's probably never too early to start this process. Stuart, I mean, I remember the first Farm Bill I worked on in 1981. You know, we had hearings in March, and I believe markup started in May of the same year. But, you know, that was a much different Farm Bill, much smaller Farm Bill. And these Farm Bills have gotten so large and complex, you know, over the last several decades that, you know, I truly, in order to have a good, healthy debate, you have to start gathering information long in advance of, you know, of any sort of formal voting on the future direction of farm policy. You know, just in terms of the biggest challenges we're going to face, you know, you clearly have to look at the money. And even now, you know, as I travel around the country talking to farmers about what's going on to Washington, I put them on notice and try and make the case strongly that, you know, the type of farm bill that I worked on in 1981 is a very, very different farm bill than the ones we are having today. And you don't have to look beyond just the allocation of dollars to understand that. And today, you know, if we're going to have a serious debate about saving money on the federal government, and I think for the most part our membership would say we need to have that debate. I don't think too many Americans would probably disagree with that we, you know, you can't sustain a trillion and a half deficit. So, yeah, you know, we need budget constraints. But in doing so, I think we also remind folks that this is a new day in terms of farm bill and spending, and a new USDA in terms of how resources are allocated. And, you know, USDA accounts, I believe it's less than 1.8% of the total USDA budget today, or a total national budget today. And that's down substantially. But even more stark is within USDA's budget itself. You know, the farm programs used to account for well over half, as much as 60-70%. Today, they're less than 18%. You know, the nutrition programs are 3/4 of the USDA budget. So, you know, you can't balance the budget and from USDA based upon the historical way that you did it, which, you know, was basically come in and you know, take the commodity programs and the programs that benefit farmers.
Finally, you mentioned a while ago the new USDA. There's a perception out in the country that there is, in fact, a new USDA, different rhetoric, different priorities, farmers no longer being the dominant stakeholder group within the department. Do you agree with that?
I think there's some validity to what you're hearing in the countryside, Stuart, and I hear that from farmers as I travel the country as well, that there's a just a general feeling that for, you know, what we would call commercial agriculture in this country, that USDA is maybe not being the champion for them that they would hope. And, you know, I don't think this is irreparable damage at all, but, you know, I think there is an expectation that your Secretary of Agriculture and the senior people within USDA are really kind of your champions in the U.S. government, and I think farmers expect to hear them talk a great deal about, you know, the wonderful bounty, wonderful food bounty that we have in this country. You know, we feed 300 million people. We do it, depending upon your numbers, somewhere between 6-8% of our disposable income going for that food and fiber. And I think there is a general sense that perhaps a change has occurred where there's more of a tendency to point out some of the shortcomings as opposed to the great bounty and the benefits that American agriculture has provided to this country.
Chuck Cotter, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. Chuck, as always, thank you so much for joining us on AgriPulse Open Mic.
Stuart, it's good to see you again. My best to you.
AgriPulse Open Mic has been brought to you by the U.S. Grains Council, a private nonprofit organization dedicated to building export markets for U.S. barley, corn, sorghum, and their products. The council is headquartered in Washington, D.C., and has 10 international offices and active market development programs in more than 50 countries. For more information, visit www.grains.org.